Hello and welcome to the Refs Need Love 2 podcast, a show that gives you a real, raw, and behind-the-scenes view of one of the hardest jobs on the pitch, the referee. I'm your host, David Gerson, a grassroots referee with over 1,200 matches under my belt and over 10 years of experience. You can find me at refsneedlove2.com, on Instagram, TikTok, and now even on YouTube. This week, we are going to be discussing referee nightmares. That's right, nightmares. Lessons from the pitch. And a letter from the mailbag, or two, because I love this. I had a referee nightmare last night, and I'm thankfully not talking about actually on the pitch. I had some other issues earlier on the pitch, but I talked about that on the TikTok and Insta already. But literally, kid you not, today is State Cup. It is 6:37 a.m., but I popped out of bed at about 5:10 a.m. because I was literally having a referee nightmare, like legit. Okay. So woke up at 6 a.m. and I showered, fed the dogs, eating breakfast. And now I am here recording this podcast with you somehow in my dream. Okay. This only happened in my dream, but I showed up at the pitch. Okay. Without a jersey on. Okay. Literally bare chested. And it was 15 minutes before kickoff. I hadn't had a pregame with my crew. I didn't know where my crew was, but all of a sudden my crew walked up to the field with the assessor, because at State Cup, you do wind up getting assessed by usually the state assessors, and they try and watch every single game. You get a proper developmental assessment at these games. But the assessor came up asking me two good questions. Why aren't you wearing a shirt, and where are your cleats? Which, you know, I thought was a little bit of an odd question. I mean, hey, if you want to wear runners, as long as they're black, who cares? But, you know, all of a sudden, I started discovering that, yes, I was not wearing a shirt, and that's a problem. And, you know, maybe I should go get my cleats. That might look better. I also discovered that I wasn't wearing my contact lenses, so I couldn't see very well. So I decided to bolt off running. Mind you, this is my dream. It's in my dream. Don't worry. This didn't really happen. So I bolt off running to the parking lot to get my ref bag and find my jersey and my contacts, only to discover after sprinting to my car, which was not next to the field, of course, that I left my keys at the field somehow. So I run back to the field, I grab my keys, I run back to the car, only to come to the realization that I didn't have the correct contacts with me. And now that I'm older, one of the anxieties about being old is that you can't read small text, and there's like small text and stuff on the contact lenses. So I had to find some random girls to read the numbers on the contacts to see which one went in the right eye and which one went in the left eye. Oh my gosh. I'm just telling you, thankfully, one of our dogs is like a freaking rooster. So like at 5 a.m., she always starts to like squirm and move, and I hurt her, and she wakes me up every morning. It can be a good thing, trust me, because I like getting up early and doing a thing like this, like a podcast or working out or something like that. So she saved me because my anxiety was growing. I mean, I was like freaking out in this dream. You know, it's like, because when you get chosen, for me, at least, I mean, this is usually the biggest honor I get. You know, when you get chosen for State Cup, it's a big deal. You know, the best referees in your state are going to be there. You know, your state referee assessor is going to be there. The people who head education for the state. You know, it's a big deal. It means a big deal to the teams, to the players, to the parents, to the coaches, and it means a big deal to the referees as well. Last year, and this is probably why I had, you know, some anxiety last year for State Cup, I was simply an AR for a game and assistant referee, and I was still really excited because, again, you get access, you're working with those top refs, but I got my times wrong. And I'm literally sitting in the chair I am right now. I wasn't recording a podcast at the time, but I was doing something else, maybe shipping orders, writing a blog. And my wife yells upstairs, is like, hey, don't you have a game in an hour? And I'm like, what? Because I always tell her my times because she's so much more organized than I am. And I went and I checked my schedule and I got my times wrong. I thought the game was like 90 minutes away and I was going to leave in like the next 15 minutes. The game was only like an hour away. Or maybe I thought it was 2 hours away, whatever. But oh my gosh. So I like run out of my house. I grab all my stuff. I zip over to the fields. Thank you. It's only 30 minutes away. You know, I was communicating with the crew the whole time. But I only got there like 20 minutes in advance. And it was pretty embarrassing. I mean, it's definitely unprofessional. You don't feel settled. I definitely didn't help the center referee out by being there late. We didn't have the real proper pregame that we normally would. We didn't do, they already walked the pitch and stuff. It just, it was not professional. And you know me, I take this kind of seriously. So I just felt really bad. So maybe that was building up in my mind. I also, you know, again, I feel sometimes because of this channel, a lot of people look at me as, you know, being, you know, professional and really trying to do the best that I possibly can as a referee and have a good example for other refs. So I think that's, you know, probably weighing on me and why I had that nightmare, but I was freaking out. I mean, just the scene again, I'm looking at this inside my own head of me standing on the field without a shirt on, this 49-year-old man, just my ref shorts and socks. And I was, oh my gosh, what a ridiculous moment in my nightmares right there. I mean, these, how ridiculous, how pathetic am I that I have referee nightmares and not about like something bad happening, but me showing up to the field, not being prepared. I don't know. It's pretty funny. Don't worry. Today, my game is at 12:30. The field is only an hour away. I will be leaving my house a little before 10 a.m. I'll be on the field no less than 90 minutes in advance. I'm sure that will be plenty of time, but I'm just being extra careful so that I don't have a nightmare on the pitch. All right. So the next part of the pod today, and I think this is really interesting, something I've been thinking about for a long time. And I'm not sure if because I work in a corporate job, and I have been in the corporate world for almost 30 years now, that I have good lessons that I can use at my corporate or actually on the pitch because I have had corporate leadership roles and management roles, or if because I've been a referee for so long that it's helped me further develop my professional appearance, behavior, and demeanor, and that enables me to do well within, you know, a complex corporate environment that's sometimes can be stressful. So what I did is I put together some of the great lessons that I think that can be learned on the pitch that you could apply in the corporate world. And really, I think it is vice versa. I think you could say, oh, you could apply these either direction. But I think it is really important because there's, for me, there's so many benefits to being a referee. I mean, I've talked about, you know, the mental benefit of what it does for me to lose myself in the game on a weekly basis and multiple times a week to be out there. I think that's fantastic. And then obviously the physical benefits of being a referee, that not only do I stay fit to ref, but also I ref to stay fit and vice versa. So I think these are great lessons. If I was trying to explain to someone why they should be a referee for a teenager or someone like that, or someone who was referee curious, which is, I think is a thing. These are some of the lessons that I would give to them. Okay. We're going to edit that part out because we had a little issue there. But these are some of the lessons that I would give if someone was curious about being a referee, whether they were an adult or definitely if they were a teenager and they were interested in being a referee, or there was a parent who said, hey, my child is interested in being a referee. These are some of the benefits that I would tell them that help prepare them for life in the professional world. So here's just a few. First one, show up on time. Okay. I know I just talked about this in my referee nightmare, but it is real. If you're on time, you are late. If you're 5 minutes early, you're on time. And I think that's really a common thing for meetings. I really like the company that I'm at right now. And one of the things is that people show up on time to meetings. So they try and get off the previous meeting, if it's a call or something like that, 2 minutes in advance, and they try and log on to the next one on time or a minute early. For a referee, okay, for a regular club recreational match, you should be there a minimum of 30 minutes at the field before kickoff. High school, similar, because you don't have the same type of check-ins. At least in my region, we don't have check-ins. We just grab the roster and that's it. We're pretty much off and running. For MLS Next, a minimum of 45 minutes in advance. If you're doing semi-professional or above, easily an hour to an hour and a half to do all the proper pre-match checks, have a proper pre-game, you know, with your other officials, with the coaches, the players, very important. So I think that's a great lesson for professional life as well. No one likes someone who always shows up late to a meeting. That's not good. And honestly, you know, I want to be efficient when I'm at work. I like having a life outside of work. So when I'm at work, I want to get work done and get moving and don't spend my entire day in meetings if I don't need to. If it's a 30-minute meeting on the schedule, but we only need 5 minutes, let's only take 5 minutes so we can actually go get work done. So I like being timely and I think it's important. I think it's good in the boardroom and I think it's good on the pitch. Look the part. That's number two. Dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Whether it's on the pitch in the office, you have to dress professionally. And I will tell you, so personally, I am always dressed in a fashion that if I had to go see a customer that day, regardless of whether or not that's on my agenda, I am going to look ready to be able to step in front of that important customer or my CEO. Seriously, if someone called me and said, hey, we've got an important customer here. Can you come on down and do a tour? Can you come do a presentation? I always want to look like I'm ready to do that. If for some reason that I needed to be pulled into a meeting with my CEO or the COO or something like that, I want to be ready to be able to go do that presentation. It is so important. You only get one chance to make a first impression. Absolutely. And I think it's really important that you dress not for the job that you have today, but for the job you want to have 3.5, 5 years from now. It's the same thing on the pitch. If someone says to me, hey, I want to move up and I want to be doing higher level games, but their socks are pulled down, you know, their shirt is untucked, they're wearing like a silly hat, you know, not just like a straight black hat. They're wearing some other type of hat or something like that. That's maybe like a trucker hat, like white in the back. I'm like, then you don't look right. Or they're wearing earrings or a necklace or something like that. I'm like, come on, man. If you show up looking sloppy and you don't look professional, you can forget about having credibility. You know, whether that's going to be in the workplace or, you know, on the pitch, people are going to judge you based on your appearance. I don't care if you don't like that, but that's true. Don't pretend it doesn't happen. If you're dressed like a professional referee and you look well put together, it's going to go a long way to having match control on the pitch of the players. And I think, you know, it's really interesting because when I show up to a match and I see a referee, within the first 3 to 5 seconds of seeing that referee, I'm like, oh, yeah. That's going to be a great ref today. I mean, or I could just tell, or they look like a great ref. Hopefully they continue to be a great ref. But generally, if they look right, they're going to ref right because they know enough to show up. They're fit. They're well put together. Their mechanics, everything. You just know. And even the spectators who may not know referees like you and I know referees. If you're listening to this podcast, you care enough about this like I do. But subconsciously, they will know. And that is going to go a really long way to having match control on the pitch with players. And I will tell you, goes a long way with your peers in the workplace if you look professional. Okay? So dress for the job you want, not the job you have. The third thing, communication. And I think this is such a critical skill for referees to develop. If you are going to be a great referee, you must have great communication skills. And I got to tell you are not going to be very successful in a job in a corporate world if you don't have great communication skills. Yes. Can you be a great software developer or maybe a graphic designer and not be a great communicator? Certainly. You could have individual job that does an individual function with a certain skill that is in demand and you can be successful. There's no doubt about it. But I got to tell you, if you're going to be in the workplace, you're going to work in a company and have to work with different people or to customers, it is a must have for communication skills. A must have. So you're going to be limited on the pitch and in the office if you don't have good communication skills. And I would tell you, as a referee, it goes well beyond just the spoken word, right? And as someone who has done sales training for a large part of my life, actually, yeah, so you guys may not know a ton about my corporate career, but for a good part of my career, I was actually a professional sales trainer. That's what I did. I taught people how to sell and I taught people how to present. I've probably done hundreds of presentations for thousands of people, teaching them how to present. And we don't talk in those presentations usually about the words you say. It's really about your body language, your arm mechanics. It's the look on your face. Does it look like you're enjoying yourself out there? Does it look like you're taking it seriously? Does it look like you're giving your best effort? All of those things matter. All of those things matter, whether you're in the office or on the soccer pitch. It's critical. Now, I would say verbal communication, also critical. Yes, got to have the body language, got to look like you're taking it seriously, got to look like you're working hard, that you're engaged. But the verbal communication, absolutely critical as well. If I can't hear you, it's going to be really hard, really, really, really hard for you to be a presenter in the professional world. And it's going to be really hard for you to be a referee on the soccer pitch, because a big part of what we do out there is we're communicating what is going on in the match. Is there a foul? Okay, which direction is it going? Okay, that would be a body language thing. When the ball goes out, whose ball is it? You know, is it red? Is it blue? You know, if there is a foul and there's a question about the foul, I mean, having the ability to communicate to the person who made the foul, you know, what you saw and why it was a foul is a big part of having credibility as a referee. You know, sometimes having dialogue, you know, with a coach, it's very, very important, again, to be able to do that. And if we can't hear you, okay, that's a problem. So again, communication's a lot of things: body language, eye contact, gestures, and of course your voice to communicate. Everyone on the field needs to know what's going on. It's not that we're trying to insert ourselves in the middle of the play all the time, but when there's a decision to be made, we need to be clear and understood. I will tell you, I love this. This is such a great line. I had finished a high school game a few weeks ago, and one of the coaches came up and you know, was shaking my hand after the game, and they said something that was so powerful and profound. I had never heard this before. He says, "I love having you as a referee because I can focus on coaching and not worrying that you're going to ref the game." And I don't know if that was the exact words. I feel like he said it in some other way, but I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "I can focus on being a coach because you're being a ref." And I thought that was so interesting. And I think what he was implying is that instead of having to, you know, to call out like, "Hey, that's a foul," or "What's going on?" or "Why was there a decision?" You know, he could rest assured that his team could trust that, number one, I was going to call fouls, that number two, I was going to be very clear as to what was going on and why I called a foul. And he was able to just focus on being a coach. He didn't have to worry about me because I was communicating. Win or lose, he knew that I was communicating, and everyone, the players, coaches, and the spectators knew what was going on. And I think that's so important. That's so absolutely important. All right, this one is really interesting. And this next one deals with the fact that some people are going to like you and some people aren't. Okay, that happens at the office and that happens on the pitch. It is just the way of the world. Okay, I feel like in my office job that sometimes, if I'm not making someone uncomfortable, I'm probably not pushing hard enough. And I'm not trying to be difficult. I just know the expectation for me is to not simply just try and like exist, but my job is to push our business forward and to achieve company goals. And sometimes I'm pushing people within internally to try something new and use a new technology or a new process or procedure. And sometimes I'm pushing externally to try something new and work towards a new technology, or I'm holding, you know, someone who's working for me, an agency that I'm working with, you know, to do their best and try and make them improve. There are going to be times when I might have to ask someone in another department or someone on my own team to do something that may be challenging for them. They may not like that, but I have to handle it professionally and be empathetic. There are also going to be times where there are people who simply don't like you for personal reasons. For whatever reason, they don't appreciate you. They don't get you. I mean, I'm a morning person. Not everyone likes that. You know, I'm really kind of gregarious and positive. Not everyone likes that. Some people like to see other people fail. Some people like to bring other people down. If they're not a happy person, they want other people not to be happy. I can't change that. I can't change that. All I can do is be the best person that I can be. That's it. That's all I can do. Whether it's on the soccer pitch, okay, or in the boardroom, you know, that's all I can do is just be the best person I can be. There's going to be coaches and parents and players who are just bitter and unhappy for whatever reason. I can't change that. But I can control me. I can control how I'm going to show up and how I'm going to treat them. And I'm telling you, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. We can try and find a way to meet in the middle. I am not going to be angry. I am not going to be bitter like they are. I am just going to be the best person I can be. And I just need to be comfortable with the fact that not everyone is going to like me. At the end of a match, I mean, it is virtually guaranteed that 100% of the people are not going to love you. It just is what it is. If you finish a match and 50% of the people are not fond of you and 50% of the people can tolerate you, oftentimes that's a pretty good number for a referee. If you wind up finishing a match and 30% of the people think you did a good job and maybe 40% of the people are like, eh, and like only 30% of the people don't like you, that's probably pretty good for a ref. Again, we make judgment calls. We make people unhappy because we have to make calls out there. It happens. Don't worry. It's not about you. It's about them and their perspective. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means they don't understand or don't agree with the call that you made. So I think it's really important, whether you're on the soccer pitch or in the boardroom, that we need to get comfortable with critique, that we get comfortable that people have different perspectives. Okay? It's okay. That's life. Just move on and try and be the best person you can be. The next thing here is mistakes are a part of life. And I think you have to be comfortable and you have to be able to push hard enough in the corporate world to be able to make mistakes, to be able to fail forward. I mean, that's how great things are achieved, when you take great risk and you get great reward. Okay, that's okay. As a referee, we need to be comfortable with making mistakes. If you're only working games where you never make a mistake, okay, and it's like U6 and U8, okay, and you're 1,000 games in, and you're still, after every game, you don't make any mistakes because it's not a very challenging environment, I mean, you're probably not in the right place. You're probably wasting your skills. If your job is too easy for you, well, you need to go find a new job and a new challenge, okay? Making mistakes is a good thing. It means you're pushing yourself. It means you're moving forward, okay? That is okay. You can learn from it and move forward. We don't dwell on mistakes. We don't let it define us, but that's how you get better, is you push yourself, you make a mistake, you learn, and you get better. All of the best athletes have missed big shots in their life. It doesn't make them a bad athlete. What makes them great is that they come back from those mistakes and they continue to excel. I mean, I know there's a great quote from Michael Jordan about all the game-winning shots, you know, that he's won, and some reporter asked him about it. And I remember he retorted, he's like, yeah, but what about the 175 game-winning shots that he missed, or could have been a game-winning shots that he missed? He's willing to take the shot. He's willing to push himself. And that's what makes him great, is because he learns and he gets better and he keeps working every single day and gets better. Get comfortable with making mistakes. Don't let it bring you down. Yes. Are you going to make a mistake at work every now and then? Yes. But it doesn't define you. Pick yourself up, learn, get better, move forward. Are you going to make a mistake on the pitch? Absolutely. But it doesn't define you. We all make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. Just try and move forward. It's a part of life. The next one, and this is a great one for, you know, the pitch or the boardroom, is treat everyone with respect. At my office, there is not a single person that I don't greet and show appreciation to. The security guards in my building, Vernon, you know, he's in my office, and Chem in the showroom right across the way from us, whatnot. Let me tell you, those are my guys. Those are my boys. Let me tell you, every day I take the time to spend a moment with them to show them how much I appreciate them. I'm going to greet them. I'm going to wish them well. I'm going to ask about their family. I want to make sure that they feel appreciated by me, whether it is the janitor cleaning the bathroom, you know, some random person, you know, washing windows in our office or something like that. You know, I'm going to make sure that they see that I see them as a whole person, that I see them as a human being, that I appreciate them. Okay. I greet them with a smile and I wish them well. It is the same thing on the pitch. When I show up for a match, you're going to see me greeting the coaches and players and my fellow referees with a smile on my face, and I'm going to make them feel like we are old friends. Okay. I am, you know, even before the match, like if I'm AR2, the assistant referee two, and I'm on the far sideline with the parents, and I'm, even if I'm simply asking parents to back up from the sideline, I am doing it nicely with a smile on my face. When I do my pregame with the players, I tell them, this nice, calm, professional voice that I'm using with you right now is the exact one I'm going to use with you on the pitch during the game. And I ask that you do the same courtesy back to me. And I tell you, I feel like when I use a calm, respectful, empathetic tone of voice, you know, it can de-escalate high-pressure situations and allows us to have a conversation as opposed to a yelling match. I've been on meetings before, highly stressful, you know, meetings where people are freaking out about budgets and timelines, and someone has started to lose it with me and come back aggressively. And I say, I can appreciate that you're upset right now. I get it. This is a, you know, high pressure situation. Help me understand how I can help you. You know, as opposed to coming back and yelling back or being nasty back, I don't match that. I don't go to where they're going. I'm not like smiling and blowing it off, but I'm going to be empathetic. I'm going to be respectful and I'm going to be calm. Okay. That is important. I don't add fuel to the fire. Okay. No one wins in an argument because no one is listening. You need to be able to get to a place where you have dialogue to be able to communicate. And that requires a calm tone of voice and a willingness to listen. Very, very important. And so I think that, again, critical on the pitch or in the boardroom. The next one here is being reliable. Okay. So referees are independent contractors. If we do not show up when we say we're available and we cancel our commitments to assigners, we should expect that we're not going to get assigned important matches in the future, or maybe any matches in the future. I've got a young teenager that I work with, and our families are really good friends. And the mom was telling me, he was playing a high school match I was watching. The mom was telling me, he's like, yeah, he's kind of on the shit list because he's canceled some assignments he's had. And I'm like, yeah, because he's not reliable. Why would someone put him into a slot if he's not sure he's going to show up? It's a big deal. And that's an important skill you need to learn early in life. I will tell you one thing I pride myself on, and my boss knows that if I say I'm going to do something, it's going to be done. He just needs to mention it one time. He's like, hey, can we do a campaign on such and such? Da, da, da. And I'm like, yep, sounds good. I got it. And we take care of it. And if for some reason I can't deliver on a commitment where I've said, yes, I can do it, I'm going to tell him well in advance. He's never surprised. Never surprised. It doesn't wind up to be the day that he's expecting something to happen that all of a sudden, oh yeah, we never were able to get that done. No. I'm going to communicate well in advance, and he's never surprised, and he can rely on me. As a referee, you have to treat this as a serious job. If you don't show up when you're supposed to and you turn back assignments late, or you don't show up to the field well in advance of the match, it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful. And it's difficult for you to get positions or advance in the future. I think that's absolutely critical. I just have a couple more here real quick. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail. I mean, again, it's part of this nightmare. You know, what are you doing to get ready for that next big presentation? You know, what do you do to stay on the cutting edge of change in your industry? What are you doing to stay mentally and physically strong to be able to give your best performance at the office? What analytics do you track regarding your performance? Again, I look at my Ref6 app every single week. I want to see my sprints, the distance I cover, you know, all those types of things. You know, what are my runs looking like? What are you tracking at work? You know, how do you know? What are your KPIs, your key performance indicators? How do you know that you're moving forward? You know, as a referee, how on the pitch, how often do you review the laws of the game? How often do you look at, your heat maps or things like that? Do you ask your mentors and peers for feedback? Are you doing the fitness work during the week to be able to perform on the weekends? If not, if you're not doing those types of things, it's one of these classic things. If you don't know where you're going, any road will do. If you don't know where you're going, any road will do. You've got to be, looking at your performance, measuring your performance, and then, setting goals for where you want to be. Otherwise, you're going to fall short of peak performance. It's the work we do in advance of the presentation that enables us to deliver with professionalism and conviction in front of our customers and the peers. And I would say it's the same thing as a referee. If you're doing that work, during the week to evaluate your performance and learn and prepare yourself physically, you're going to be better on the pitch. The last one here, handwritten notes matter. A heartfelt message of appreciation written by hand just hits different. It just hits different. It shows you took the extra time to give a little bit of yourself to others. And you're probably wondering, like, well, what does this have to do with being a referee? Probably nothing about being a ref. But in my Refs Need Love 2 business, every single order, and I've shipped out over 1,000 in the last year, literally over 1,000 individual orders that I've shipped out from my house at this desk I'm sitting at right here. Every single order I've shipped out comes with a personally handwritten note on a red card, of course. You got to have that. But I have received so many messages of sincere appreciation specifically for those notes. People wind up posting them on social media. It's such a rare thing these days that sets you apart from the masses. So in my professional life, I take time and I write little notes to the people who work for me, to colleagues, to other peers. Take time and write someone a note. It really makes a big difference. It's better than an email, I promise you. All right. Well, that's just a few things that I think cross over from the pitch to the boardroom. I think these are great lessons, whether we're wielding a whistle or a keyboard at the office. Again, does being in a corporate world help me be a better referee, or does being a referee help me be, better in the corporate world? I think it's a little bit of both. I've gotten training in both places and experience in both places that help me be better at both. But I don't know that I would be as good in the corporate world as I am right now if I didn't have my experience as a referee, and vice versa. I think it's both, really important for my growth and development. All right. So just two quick things, and then I'm going to go into the mailbag. I had someone mention this in a question to me, and I thought this was important. Is it okay to have banter with fans as a referee? I don't know. I feel like some coaches want to have banter, like they want to be able to talk to a ref during the match and go back and forth. I just think it's a dangerous precedent to set. Now, again, I'm all about communication. If there's a question about a call or something nature, or there's been something odd that's happened, I think explaining that to a coach is important. But I do not want to be going back and forth with a coach during the match, having comments come my way and them expecting me to come back every single time. My focus needs to be on the pitch, and definitely not with spectators. Definitely not with spectators. I do not want to be setting the precedent where it's okay for spectators, especially at a grassroots match, okay, at a youth soccer match, for spectators thinking that it's okay to be talking to the referee. Because I generally see that only going one way, and that's going to end up going bad, where they're going to wind up dissenting, or they're going to wind up saying, jokes about the referee or nasty things about the referee, or whatever it is. I just don't see a lot of good coming from that. I think we need to maintain professionalism. We need to be focused on the players on the pitch. And yes, having some dialogue with a coach every now and then is a good idea. But the whole idea of going back and forth and joking back and forth, man, you got to be really careful about that, because I think it can go bad really, really quickly. Also, on that same thing, as an assistant referee, sometimes you're there as the AR2 and you're on the side of the spectators and parents, and parents want to, joke with you or ask questions or stuff like that. Listen, if it's a simple question, yeah, give a simple answer. That's great. If someone wants to understand why the center ref made a decision and you know why because you saw it, great. If you don't know why, don't say, I don't know why he called that, or that was a bad call. Just say, yeah, the referee had a different view, I'm not sure. Or don't respond or something in nature if you don't have something positive to say. I think it's really important that you limit your conversation with spectators or parents. Obviously, you know, how much time is left? Totally. Tell them the time, you know, you know, what was the call there? And you could say, oh, that was offside. You know, I saw the assistant referee raise the flag, but you never want to be critical of the center referee. If you don't know why someone calls something, and even if you think it's wrong, don't say you think it's wrong. Just say, yeah, they have a different perspective. I'm not sure. You could say that. Or, you know, again, I think he called a direct free kick for the other team. Just leave it there. But be really careful when you're speaking to spectators or parents, because let me tell you, they might be recording you, and they might share that conversation with someone after the game. So be very sensitive to that. All right, real quickly here, and we're going to close out the show with a letter from the mailbag. I try and share sometimes these ones that just really touch me, that are deep. I don't think I'm going to cry on this one. I know I cried on the last podcast. I'm sorry. You know, I'm an emotional guy and I cry more as I get older. I feel like I cry more every single year that I'm alive. You know, just I'm so grateful for everything in my life. But sometimes I get these letters where I'm just so unbelievably impressed with how thoughtful the author was and the way they describe things, and that they really, you know, hit me either because they've gotten something out of the podcast that they find value in, or they're sharing an experience that, you know, I can totally see myself in. I just think it's really cool. So this is a letter from Chris from Colorado that I think you guys will appreciate. Okay. So it reads, David, I'll introduce myself the way you do on your podcast. 57 years old and 32 years of being a referee. No idea how many games I've done in my life, but it is in the thousands. Add to that, that the two kids I coached from age 3 through their high school career at O, and I played until I was 47. Needless to say, I have seen a lot of soccer. After a period of time away from refereeing, partially because of your pod, partially because one of my old ref friends telling me the world was short of referees, I am back. Went through the retraining from scratch just to get a refresher of everything and the changes to the rules that happened over the last decade. And it was the right decision. I am a slower referee than I was a decade ago, but I'm a smarter one. Better at managing game situations and especially dissent. I talk a lot, like I almost never shut up. Always praising play, checking on nicks and dings, answering questions about rules when time allows, and it served me well. Two issues happened in a U13 elite game this past weekend. I was the center, very experienced AR2, but a brand new AR1. Blue is carrying the ball. White came in, got all ball. Blue went over the ball and landed on his head. Hard contact, but totally legal, just hard. While the player in blue was being attended to on the field, I went to the player in white and said, good tackle, probably a little harder than it needed to be, and maybe just tone it down a bit. He was grinding his teeth, but nodded and walked away. Almost immediately, my AR2 called me over and said that as the player was walking away, he said, quote, he, meaning the referee, he should shut the fuck up, unquote. Based on this, we yellow carded the player in white for dissent. White coach went ballistic, but I walked over to him and told him it was for dissent and exactly what the player said, not the contact. He thanked me, and all was good on that front. The blue coach was not happy that he lost a player, possible concussion, but even he agreed that the play was clean, just hard. I have refereed the blue team 3 times this year, and they have lost close games every time. I know from the coach's look when he saw me that he was not happy. We got a 1-1 game with about 15 minutes to go. My AR1 called a throw-in for white. It was ping pong off a bunch of legs near the line with half the players out of bounds. I had no chance of helping and went with the AR's call. Blue bench explodes. White takes it down the field and scores. The game finished 1-2. After the game, my AR1 pulled me aside and said he thinks he blew the call. I asked him if it was because of the reaction for the bench or the result of the play. He said no. He thought about it, and he thinks he just blew the throw-in call, and he called it the wrong way. We talked about positioning and how to always have a good angle as an AR, and he went off to his next game. Here's the important part of the story. I went to the blue coach, and I told him what the AR said, and I apologized that we got it wrong. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. He took personal responsibility and apologized. He didn't need to. Now, I don't know if that's appropriate in every single game, but man, it takes a big man, or a mature person, man or woman, to say that they got something wrong and to be honest. Okay, I just want to say that. All right, now back to his letter. He and I are about the same age and betting we have about the same amount of coaching experience. He looked at me and said, "Thank you." That is the first time a referee has ever apologized. He was the assistant coach for the next two games, U16 and U17 boys that I had that day, both good games and both losses for Blue. He came up to me after the last game as we were walking off the field and said, quote, "You are a good ref and you did a good job. It's just tough losses for us," unquote. I thanked him and wished him good luck for the rest of the season. The lesson, communicate, de-escalate, and communicate some more. It's hard to teach de-escalation as a skill because it takes role-play training. My bet is you and I got it in our corporate experience, but communication and de-escalation through that communication keeps the games manageable. This matches your advice in a pod from last year, and you are dead right. Hope your next game is red card free. From Chris Eaton in Littleton, Colorado. Oh, what a great one, right? And I thought it was just so apropos given the topic for today about, you know, corporate experience and how you could apply that in the pitch and kind of vice versa. But, you know, when I'm on the pitch, if I think, you know, if someone's like, "Oh, you totally blew that one," you know, I'll say, you know, "I'm sorry. I can only call what I see. You know, I'm sorry if I got that wrong." Or if someone comes up and a player's like, "That person hit me in the back," and I'll say, "You know, I'm sorry. I didn't see it, man. I will look for it." And, you know, sometimes when they tell me that, I do find that there is someone who's like elbowing them in the back, you know, on a free kick or is trying to step on their feet, and I can call it. But I think it's important that we are honest and that, you know, if we've made a mistake, it's okay to apologize, say, "Hey, I'm just trying to do my best. I'm sorry. I may have missed that one." It's okay. And I tell you, that takes all of the pressure out of the situation. It de-escalates the situation. If you're like, you have that attitude of, "I'm always right," you know, and you're, you know, pompous, well, you know, that's going to escalate the situation. It doesn't make it easier for you to manage the match. I mean, yes, there are times when we need to be confident and be like, "Hey, you know, that's what I've got. We're going with it. No problem." But, you know, escalating doesn't help. Doesn't help. All right, we got one last one for the mailbag, and then we're going to call it a day. This is from Jackson in Easter, PA. And he says, "Just dropping you a quick note to express my thanks and provide some feedback on the success you've had with influencing refs here in Eastern Pennsylvania. Number one, probably the number one piece of advice that I took for your TikToks and podcasts is a little thing that you do during pregame instructions, something along the lines of, 'The voice that I'm using now is the voice I intend to use throughout the match,'" unquote. I thought that was extremely powerful, and I started implementing it in my pre-match discussion. I amended it. My speech is now, quote, "If I make a call that you don't understand, please feel free to ask me to explain it. I have no issue with that. My only ask is, see the voice I'm using right now? My goal is that we use the same voice throughout the game, and we can focus on making it a fun experience for all of us," unquote. He writes, "Oh my God. That's made such a difference. I noticed that kids now feel 10 times more comfortable coming up to me during the game, asking me what I saw. In one instance, during a direct free kick that required a ceremonial restart, the player took a shot before I blew the whistle, and I had to get everyone to stop and restart. The defense was a little frustrated that the offensive team got a second chance, but the players were very good about approaching me respectfully and just saying they didn't understand what happened and asking me to explain. And the conversation stopped the game for a few seconds, got everyone on the same page, and we were great. They understood, they did their job, we moved along. I now make sure that speech takes place with every game I ref because it just does such a great job in aligning expectations and setting the groundwork for mutual respect. So thank you for that. I got all of that from you and your efforts." Love that one. Number two, the other one is just a side note. I'd say that 50% of the people I work with listen to your podcast. Was doing a game with a newer 3-year referee. We were discussing the rules and I mentioned your podcast as a resource, at which point he immediately goes into his bag and pulls out a bunch of stickers. He writes in parentheses, "I gave out all my refs need love 2 coins, but I'll get more when they're in stock. For now, I have some stickers." It's just so funny. And his parentheses here. He's right. It's working. That's all I'm saying. Just FYI, I got coins in stock. I got stickers. I got cards. It all here. And he just wrote, that he loved that. And so that's the end of that message. But it was so cool. And just again, I'm so thrilled that this podcast is having an impact, that people are digging it, that people dig the videos. I get messages from coaches, from parents, from players, and certainly, obviously, other referees. You guys are my peeps, right? But I think this whole community around the beautiful game here in the U.S., that we have the power to make change. As referees can set the tone for, how that game is going to go. Again, we can't control everyone. Not everyone wants to have a great, mutual, respectful, relationship with their referee. Again, we can't change them. All we can be is the best that we can be. All right. I hope you enjoyed today's pod. Let's hope I don't have a nightmare on the pitch today at State Cup in a few hours. If so, you'll hear about it on the next podcast. If you dig what I do, please spread the word and tell others. Also, please support the refs. A Need Love To store online. Pick up some merch if you haven't already. Everything gets poured back into making this channel possible. I wish you all the best, and I hope your next match is red card free.